This episode makes mention of the atrocities of war and uses sound effects like explosions and gunshots. Specific trigger warnings for these can be found on our website or in the description section of whichever platform you found this episode. Please be advised. It is August 2021. In the middle of a pandemic, unprecedented in the history of the modern age, the delayed Olympics pushes through in Tokyo. The Philippines has gone without a gold in the Olympics for 97 years. The three-medal streak, obtained in 1932, over 80 years ago, when the Philippines was still an American colony, continues to go unbeaten. In a feat more than 16 years in the making, Heidilyn Diaz does the historic, the extraordinary. On the world stage, she lifts the barbell in the 55-kilogram section and in doing so, wins the Philippines' first ever gold medal. We watch her on television, along with the rest of the world. We see her eyes light up the moment she knows she has it. Those same eyes well up with tears as she drops the weight and brings her hands to her mouth, screaming in pure joy and disbelief. In innumerable Filipino households everywhere, that same joy is echoed. Hello, and welcome to Yugto. If you're new to the podcast, then an extra hello and welcome to you. My name is Sunny, and we're here to talk about and get mad about Filipino history. Heidilyn Diaz led the pack. Nesty Petesho, Carlo Paalam, Yumir Marshall all garnered medals in boxing. Together, amidst the pandemic that has crippled the nation, surfaced gross inequalities and government blunders and caused a frightening number of deaths, we watched and found a reason to be excited and hopeful again. In their honor and in honor of the indignities they suffered to be able to gather the funding and support needed to reach the podium, this Yugto season, we're talking about sports. We'll hear more about Heidilyn at the end of the season. Until then, let us listen to the stories of the athletes who paved the way. And if you're telling yourself, Sunny, this new, brighter, more hopeful tone of the podcast doesn't really match Yugto's tagline of Get Mad at Filipino History, then, dear listener, I'll ask you to save your reservations till the end of the episode. It's true that after discussing the darkness of the era of martial law, it's nice to be able to discuss bits and pieces that do give our country light and pride. But as we will learn today, the medals that people like Heidilyn bring home are not the whole story. In the life of most athletes, there are struggles behind their triumphs that we must approach critically and that we must remember. We'll start at the very beginning. Our very first medalist in the Olympics, the Ilocano Shark, Teofilo Ildefonso. It is November 5, 1903, the turn of the century. The Philippine Revolution that deposed the Spanish was just a few years ago. Jose Rizal being executed in Bagumbayan, Andres Bonifacio's calling the people to arms at Pugadlawin. For some, even the garroting of the priests Gomburza, are all in living memory. The Americans sit comfortably in all seats of power, having bought us off the Spanish for a measly price. The Philippines is uneasy, still suffering the direct effects of colonialism. But we are also modernizing. And over the next few years, the country will be given more and more chances to represent ourselves on the world stage, in a way that was not allowed during the Spanish regime. In this time of much change on this day, Felipe and Aniceta Ildefonso bear the second of their three children in Pidig, Ilocos Norte. They name him Teofilo. The Ildefonsos are a small average family, living simply and happily. Unfortunately, tragedy strikes. Anceta dies giving birth to another son after Teofilo. Not too long after, Felipe passes as well. Just like that, the three Ildefonso brothers find themselves orphans. The three have only each other to rely on as they grow older. Between scrounging for money and navigating these times of transition, there are at least bits of respite in each other's brotherhood and in each other's company. For example, in their spare time, Teofilo and his brothers teach each other how to swim in the nearby Gisit River. As with a lot of people who have trouble finding their footing because of unfortunate circumstances, Ildefonso decides to join the army at the tender age of 19, to be a fighting arm of the American regime, and in doing so, to give himself a fighting chance at a better life. He knows it's a secure place, steady income. An unexpected side effect of joining the army is that Ildefonso is finally able to swim somewhere that is not the Gisit River. And you know what? He discovers as he dives into these military pools and swims against his American and Filipino compatriots, he's actually quite good at it. The year he turns 20, Ildefonso starts swimming competitively. At first, only locally. But strangely, these competitions turn out to be a breeze. The army notes the young man's talent. Soon he's being sent to compete in international competitions. Before long, Teofilo Ildefonso of the 57th Infantry Regiment of Philippine Scouts accumulates 144 medals from different swimming meets. It is 1928, and the Olympics are in Amsterdam. It is the first time a cauldron is lit in the opening ceremony. But we're focusing now on a first that's much more important to the Philippines. But we're focusing now on a first that's much more important to what was then called the Philippine Islands. Competing in the Olympics practically is an offshoot of the Americas. A no-name athlete from a colonized country who is just happy to be there is about to change the face of modern swimming forever. Ildefonso at this point has swam and won consistently at the Far Eastern Games. That is, the previous iteration of the Asian Games. Competing in the 1923 and 1927 versions of those games, he outswims everyone, including the two Japanese favorite swimmers, Tsuruta and Koroike. All that, and he still doesn't even have a formal coach, and still swims in the rivers of his youth every now and then. It wasn't the least bit surprising that he had ended up qualifying for the Amsterdam Olympics. Let's quickly break down swimming as an event. Competitive swimming has four strokes: freestyle, backstroke, the butterfly, and the breaststroke. All these strokes depend on how the swimmer is able to propel themselves forward via moving their arms and legs with strength, but without generating resistance in the water. With this in mind, in general, it's simply better to be taller for all of these strokes. A taller person can put the same amount of effort as a shorter person in a single stroke and get twice as far just because of their length. This is why it was considered generally that swimming was simply not the sport for Asians on an intercontinental stage. But see, Ildefonso had his own style of breaststroke. For the stroke, one normally pulls with both arms underneath the water, relying on a bit of momentum alongside the arm strength to propel the swimmer forward. Ildefonso, in his informal self-training, found he moved faster when he did his arm strokes closer to the surface of the water. The lack of depth meant each stroke pulled him forward less, but that he could do them faster and quicker in succession. It gave him an unprecedented speed. From the moment he dives into an Olympic pool for this first time, it is this style of his that allows him to surmount his taller, presumably better, more formally trained competitors. Just like that, in his first showing at the Olympics, Ildefonso pulls off something impossible. He wins a bronze medal. A medal for the Philippines. the pride Ildefonso brought home was something that was impossible to put into words. That the small brown Filipino could outswim the tallest of colonizers was jaw-dropping. That he could innovate a sport and make it more advantageous for people of his ethnicity, his body type, was literally game-changing. To this day, Ildefonso is attributed as the father of the modern breaststroke. He not only changed the face of Filipino sporting, he changed the face of swimming as we know it. In the 1932 Olympics, Ildefonso does it again. In the pools of Los Angeles, the Philippines took home 3 medals, a feat that would be unrepeated and unbeaten for the next 80 years until the Olympics in 2021. One of these medals was Ildefonso's, again for his favorite, the breaststroke. The other two were for Simeon Toribio, for men's high jump, and Jose Villanueva for boxing. Ildefonso is still the star though. After all, he is now the first and only 2-time Olympic medalist in the Philippines. And back in his home region, in the Far Eastern Games, he is still a constant presence on the podium, and leaving favorites from other countries behind every time he dives in. It seems like a long, cushy life is ahead of Ildefonso, now in his 30s, talented, famous, and a record and history maker. Perhaps he'll win a few more medals before stepping back. Perhaps he'll become a coach. Unlike his past, it seems that the future is bright and full of promise. Unfortunately, it is the 1930s. The Olympics provides a brightness yet to be televised to home screens via live feeds, but nevertheless a subject of fascination and celebration all over the world. And yet, even in the midst of it, one of the darkest shadows of human history looms. World War II is about to begin. Teofilo Ildefonso will be an Olympian for as long as he lives. He is also a father at this point to 6 children, and husband to a lady named Manuela. But right now, he serves a more important function. A lieutenant in the Filipino Army at the onset of World War II. Ildefonso is actually fresh off the boat in one respect. He has only just competed in the 1936 Olympics in Berlin, in the home base of the Nazi regime. He might have even seen Adolf Hitler at the opening ceremonies. What he thought of the horrors of the German movement then is lost to history. But there is a possibility he was not too concerned with what the Nazis were up to. After all, the enemy facing him when he got home, in the day-to-day, were the Japanese. The people who were, for him, just his friendly rivals that he would often compete against in the Far Eastern Asian Games, and who used to be the favorites to win in swimming until he came along. Ildefonso arrived back in the Philippines medalless. He placed a respectable 7th in his event. Either way, there was not a lot of time to celebrate with his fellows from the Olympics. They were all shuffled soon to where they were needed most, the military front. The Japanese were ruthless as they descended upon the Philippines. Manila was devastated. Women were carted off to be raped. Men were killed in horrendous ways. Abandoned by its American colonizers, who were trying to regroup on the other side of the Pacific, the young nation of the Philippines was suffering. The last bastion of defense in the Philippines were Corregidor and Bataan. When those were surrendered, the Japanese soldiers marched thousands of prisoners of war to camps, in a journey that was so long, so arduous, that countless would die simply making the trip. This was the Bataan Death March, a 105-kilometer-long torture for Filipino and American soldiers. A particularly horrific event in a history full of horror in the Philippines. During this long march, men are randomly stabbed, shot, or beaten. Many of them are subjected to torture via being made dehydrated and hungry. They are made to strip and stand in the sweltering sun. They are made to sit near cool pools of water that they aren't able to drink from. When anybody asks for water, they are shot. Men slowly but surely die from exhaustion. Some try to make a run for it, but are shot on sight by the Japanese soldiers. In the end, more than 20,000 people die on that march. And Ildefonso and the men under his command, including his younger brother, were there. Perhaps it's the Olympic training that gives Ildefonso the stamina to survive the unsurvivable. Somehow he withstands the ordeal. He makes it. But at the end of the death march, only more death. The Capas concentration camp is an unkind place. Everywhere men sit, forced to work, to starve, and dying all the while. Teofilo Ildefonso sits there, waiting for rescue, or waiting for an end to everything. There is a brief spark of hope amidst all this. In the merciless Japanese army, there is one Lieutenant Yoshi Suruta. The name might be familiar. It is the same Yoshi Suruta who Ildefonso swam against constantly in the Olympic pools and in the numerous Far Eastern Asian Games not too long ago, when war was still a threat and not an everyday bloody reality. Suruta remembers Ildefonso, the man who's beat him, his competitor, his rival, acquaintance, possibly even his friend. Suruta has been beaten by Ildefonso in international competitions several times, and he has likely beaten Ildefonso now and then. He knows that Ildefonso is truly a unique and one-of-a-kind athlete, his rival, worthy of respect and worthy of being saved. Upon realizing that Ildefonso is in captivity, Suruta hurriedly sends out messages via all their channels that Ildefonso must be taken into special custody where he can be treated better. Suruta realizes that Ildefonso is a history maker, who has accomplished so much. It is not right to rob him of his life. It is a good thought, and one of course that should not have been reserved just for one man because of his achievement in sports, but a thought that should have been spared for the millions of Filipinos who perished during this war. But I digress. Suruta played Good Samaritan a bit too late. He does not search for Ildefonso early enough to save him from dysentery or blood poisoning or septicemia or exhaustion. Ildefonso was a one-of-a-kind swimmer who was able to make sure he would be forever remembered in the history of the Olympics, of Southeast Asian and of Filipino sports. But at the very end of the day, at the end of the march, in the midst of this war, he was only just a man, as human as any other. It is June 1942. The man we called the Ilocano Shark, a three-time competitor in the Olympics and the first Olympic winner in the history of the Philippine Islands, at the time the only back-to-back Filipino Olympic medalist, the creator of the modern breaststroke, a father to his children, a leader to his men, survivor of the death march, Teofilo Ildefonso, perishes. He takes his last breath in the arms of his crying younger brother with whom he learned to swim all those years ago, in the rivers of Ilocos. He is 39 years old. Ildefonso's body is carted off and thrown into a mass grave, along with the countless other dead. To this day, it is unknown where his final resting place is. But there is a statue of him in the walls of the missing at the Manila American Cemetery, beaming and hopeful as he was, the day he brought home those bronze medals for the nation. At school, we learned names like Efren Bata Reyes and Paeng Nepomuceno and so and such, but we did not learn the name of Teofilo Ildefonso until he was being remembered because it was necessary to compare Heidelin's Olympic first to other firsts. Ildefonso will always be a trailblazer. And even if he doesn't have the name recognition of some other athletes in our history, at least the world of international swimming has made sure to commemorate him always. He was inducted into the International Swimming Federation's Hall of Fame in 2010. But more than what we perceive to be a lack of recognition for him, we are mad today about the men and women who have their whole lives ahead of them, and whose lives are snuffed by the brutality of needless war. Ildefonso was far from the only Olympian to die during the Second World War. We had Olympians who competed in basketball, boxing, athletics, shooting, wrestling, and swimming, who all perished during the Japanese occupation. Miguel White, for example, who stood with Teofilo in those controversial 1936 Olympics, and who brought home medals for the Philippines too, did not survive the end of the war. Jacinto Siria Cruz, Simplicio de Castro, Abdurrahman Ali, and more. All of them had their lives extinguished before they could even properly consider what kind of life they wanted after being sportsmen in their prime. The Japanese army and the brutality of the Second World War robbed us of all of that. It couldn't really be helped that this episode about the hope of sports eventually became a story of the horrors of war. But this was simply the reality that our sportsmen experienced, and experience still. They can spend their entire lives training for one moment of glory, but that moment of glory does not spare them the sufferings of the everyday. It does not save them from socio-political circumstances that reduce people into cannon fodder. The rest of our episodes this season won't tackle this same message about war. I promise there are plenty of other reasons to be mad about the state of sports in the Philippines. But these names mentioned today deserve to be remembered. They deserve our rage against similar circumstances today that rob people of the same opportunities. Here's to you, Teofilo Ildefonso. The way you swam lives today in the countless swimmers around the world. The war you fought ended, and today we continue to fight for the same freedoms that you did. We thank you, and we remember you. Thank you for listening. If you're interested in supporting the local Filipino sports scene, why not support Game On Sports PH? Game On Sports PH offers multi-sport classes and focused sports programs designed to help kids discover the sport that they love, both physically and online. You can follow Game On Sports PH on Instagram and Facebook. Yugto is narrated, researched, and written by Sunny, and is supported by the Work in Progress team, or WIP Inc. Sources and any subsequent corrections of facts for this episode can be found on the website. Support the Yugto podcast on Spotify, Anchor, and YouTube, or email us any questions at whipinc.ph@gmail.com. Finally, help us get these stories out there by sharing us on Twitter at @yugto_pod, on Instagram at @yugto.pod, or on Facebook at @yugto.pod. Join us next week for another episode about the history of Filipino sports. And remember, activism is not terrorism. Truth is not terrorism, and don't waste your vote this coming May. See you next time.